Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined by the Andre Drummond to my Reggie Jackson in this two-man game we're playing today. It's John Gotis for a two-man pod. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm way too selfish to set screens, though.
I'm always that guy at open gym playing with, like I've mentioned, teenagers. It's like setting screens and like playing smart, and all the other kids are just like bombing away and not passing and not finding me when I make smart cuts. It's frustrating.
No, man, I'm Kobe. I don't set screens. I don't set screens and I don't take charges. I'm a pure scorer.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. If we're playing like a half court game, where you gotta like clear to the 3-point line, I'm a little more aggressive defensively and more into setting the screens. But like, if you're playing an end-to-end game, first of all, no one ever like sets up offense when you're playing end-to-end and pickup. It's just like whoever has the ball just goes to the bucket and tries to score. And so there's not really any time to set picks or anything. And like, I'm just less inclined to play defense because I'm running back and forth from 3-point line to 3-point line. So
yeah, no, I'm lying a little bit. The rec league that I play in is half court and I do set screens. So I will be your Drummond today.
So it's just the two of us today. Russell had to bow out at the last second for some family stuff. Hope everything's okay there. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. The Raptors had a pretty solid week. They beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. They had a sweet buzzer beater to beat the Wizards in a game they probably should have lost. And they lost a game to Phoenix that, I don't know, I thought they kind of played pretty well. We'll get into that. Going to talk a bit about James Johnson tweeting, Luis Scola, a bit of Terrence Ross, a whole bunch of stuff. And we're also going to sort of take a temperature of the rest of the Eastern Conference because we're pretty Raptor-centric on this podcast, and I figured we should probably take a look at the other teams around the Raptors in the standings just a little bit. Get into where that Raptors pick is going to land with the Knicks and a whole bunch of other stuff. And as always, we'll wrap up with our episode sponsor. So thanks for joining us this week, and we'll be back on the other side with our first segment. All right, welcome back to The Headquarters. Sean Woodley with John Gotis. We're going to go over the Raptors' week. They went 2-1 this week. They beat the Cleveland Cavs to, what was the final score in that one? Like 105-99 or something like that?
103-99, very good.
103-99. Wow, I can't believe I was even close there. I'm just pulling that out of my ass. Anyway, so yeah, they beat the Cavs in a game that was pretty encouraging, I got to say. It was, the Cavs were down a lot of guys, and their bench was horrible, and Jared Cunningham started at point guard. But, like, I don't know. It was a pretty encouraging win for the Raptors. First, let's just start with that one, I guess. What stood out from you from that game, John?
Drake Knight.
Yes, I forgot about Drake
Knight. It was Drake
Knight. How can I forget? I wrote an entire preview of just with Drake lyrics and got ripped for it.
Yeah, you did. It was good. We made fun of you, but it was good. Everyone go read Sean's preview for a game that's over now because it was really funny and he only used Drake lyrics for like 4 or 5 paragraphs. Like it was clearly like you spent way too much time on that, which is why we made fun of you. But
yeah, well, see, the thing is, like, I'm not that like well versed in Drake's discography either.
No.
So I was just kind of like, I had a bunch of jokes that I had like, you know, ready, and then like the Timofey Mozgov one I thought was pretty good, and like I had a couple that like I knew I was going to use, and then I started writing and I was like, man, I don't have anything. So I just sort of like started just googling keywords in his lyrics to see if anything would like come up that I could make a joke out of.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it took me like 4 hours, but whatever.
Are you kidding? Did it actually take 4 hours?
I mean, I was watching other stuff while I was doing it, but yeah, it took me a while to get it all together.
Here's my thing about Drake Knight, and it's been 3 years now, and I graduated from a program like where journalism classes, they told you not to talk about other people in the industry. So I won't. I will preface this by saying that I mean no harm to the Raptors broadcast team, flexing in Sportsnet and TSN and whoever are part of that team. But the whole Drake interview over the span of an entire quarter is the most awkward thing I think that in the history of professional sports broadcast, and it just doesn't get any better. It's in the third year now, and it just is not getting any easier to listen to and watch.
The thing is with that is like I feel like it could be a lot worse because I think Matty D and Jack, as unlikely as it seems, are kind of tuned into the whole pop culture and the Drake thing.
Thank goodness, too. Yeah, because
they actually,
it could be way more awkward.
It could be like Boston. It could be like Tommy Heinsohn being just like, just having no clue where to go with the conversation. So yeah, like it's saved by the fact that at least the broadcaster is a little bit in touch. I don't know. I love everything about Drake Knight. I think it's so just, it's like, it's silly, it's dumb, but like, I don't know. The jerseys look pretty awesome. It seems to be like an extra buzz in the building when it happens. It's usually against a pretty like good team, and it's usually an entertaining game, and the Raptors win every time. I think that's
yeah, they're undefeated
correlation for sure. Yeah. No, it's, I don't know. They're fun games. Jack Armstrong dancing in the Hotline Bling booth is like why Jack Armstrong is great. I know a lot of people kind of like rip on Jack for having weird thoughts about three pointers and stuff, but like, but for me, it's like, I don't know, especially as someone like, I don't know, we're going to sound like douches, but like as people who watch the game pretty intently and look at it in an analytical way, like, I don't think any color announcer is going to tell us something that we don't already sort of know.
Yeah.
So I'm cool with the guy being super endearing and entertaining and fun and yelling about MGD.
Like, no, you're right. We're better. Totally. We're better at watching basketball than other people. You're right.
That's exactly what I was saying. But no, like on the court in that game, I think the thing that stood out to me was, holy crap, it's awesome to have a guy who can guard LeBron James. Like, Damari Carroll was so good on him. Like, LeBron gets his numbers always, but Damari had, like, a few plays where it was just like, yeah, this is, I've never seen a Raptors player do this to LeBron. And, like, even, like, Patrick Patterson had a couple really nice defensive plays on LeBron, too, when on, like, switches and stuff. I don't know. There was a really good defensive performance against LeBron, and Damari Carroll was the big, you know, initiator of that. It was great.
Yeah, no, Carroll was phenomenal. And, you know, you're right. LeBron got his numbers that night, but Carroll was obviously the story just because you get to watch somebody actually put in effort and be able to take him away from what he wants to do and put pressure on him at the point of attack. So that was definitely one thing that stood out. And then obviously Kyle Lowry's performance was incredible on the other end, the offensive end, the 27 points on 11 of 17. And he's just tearing it up right now, and they've been able to do that without him playing quite as many minutes as Carroll or DeRozan, which is nice to see. So Lowry's getting to sit a little bit more, which is beneficial to the team in the long run, but you get a little worried about Carroll playing 40-plus minutes like he did against Cleveland and has been quite a bit this season.
Yeah, I'm not convinced his foot is fully healed, because, like, how could two games...
How could it be, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's no way sitting for a couple games is going to heal that. I mean, hopefully it's just something they can monitor and manage all season long. And if, I don't know, it's getting to the point now where the schedule is probably going to lighten up a bit. And maybe, you know, once they get through the next few games, I know they have, like, San Antonio coming up on the schedule, the Warriors on Saturday, which we'll talk about. But maybe once they get through a few more tough games, maybe they can afford to rest them a little bit once the schedule evens out. But and I wouldn't be objecting to that, because I think you want to make sure he's healthy for the playoffs. But yeah, Kyle Lowry, man, holy crap, he's playing out of his mind. Like, he's playing better than he was at the start of last season, I think. Like, he's been ridiculous. He's probably been, I don't know, like the third best player in the East so far behind Paul George and LeBron. Is that fair?
That's probably fair. I think that Kyle Lowry, and we might not be giving him as much credit as he's due this year because he's not by himself, and DeRozan's playing pretty nice next to him and not injured and everything. But yeah, Lowry's definitely in line for another all-star appearance, and certainly I think the best point guard in the Eastern Conference right now, just based on how much Wall has struggled and Irving is still injured, and that there's really no argument in my mind to be made that Lowry isn't the best point guard playing right now in the East.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Let's talk about Washington, because that game, I didn't get to see a ton of this. I was at a bar, so I watched like the fourth quarter over the shoulder of some people, and I saw pretty much the entire end of the game, but from what I did see, it looked like the Raptors were making a ton of mistakes and just Washington couldn't capitalize on anything. And Wall looked a little off, and I don't know. They're weird that they adopted this new style, but they didn't seem like ready to sort of take it on. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you know, they're struggling. They're figuring things out. It's not like Indiana where they're just like, okay, we're going to go small and we're going to destroy everybody. Yeah, I don't know. Like, did you get to catch most of this game?
I actually was the one who recapped this one, so I did get a pretty good look at this one. And it was just an ugly basketball game, and it was mostly just due to both teams playing really well defensively. And the Raptors were giving up probably more open shots than the Wizards were. I was really impressed with the Wizards on the defensive end. And, you know, they forced the 22 turnovers for the Raptors, which was a little bit the fact that they weren't sharp, but also the fact that the Wizards were really solid defensively. And they just have players who can frustrate the Raptors at almost every position. You know, Gortat is really good offensively and can frustrate a guy like Biombo or Valanciunas in the playoffs last year. Obviously, they have the size at the 3 or 2 spot to frustrate DeRozan with Otto Porter. And even Garrett Temple also in lieu of Porter did a really good job on DeRozan as well. So there, you could see that DeRozan was kind of pushing when Temple was in the game, and that kind of turned into a typical DeRozan game where he forces it a little bit too much. 8 for 20 was his line from that one. And Kyle Lowry was good, but didn't shoot all that well. It was just like, it was a game where it didn't feel like they should win, but they pulled it out in the end with the Joseph game winner. So obviously that's just a really quality win because it's a different type of win than we've seen this team get so far this season.
Yeah, it's nice that like we talked about this with the Clippers win last week, where the offense just fell off a cliff in the second half, but the defense is good enough that it can just keep them in every game that they're in. And it's nice, like last year, again, like they probably don't win that game against Washington because Washington probably just tortures them offensively because the Raptors couldn't get any stops. And yeah, it was really nice to see in that final play, DeMar DeRozan, like passing up the opportunity near the basket for Corey Joseph in the corner. I mean, that was just some awesome stuff to watch and stuff that you never really see with this team. You never really see one of the secondary guys taking a game-winning shot or game-tying shot or a crucial shot.
Not on this team.
Which was really nice. Yeah, like never. And Corey Joseph, man, holy, he is I think it's Matt Moore who's been riding this Corey Joseph for six-man conversation, and I am like fully on board with this, not just because I'm a Raptors fan, but because like he affects the game so much on both ends of the floor when he's out there, and he's in there in crunch time all the time. And like you look around the league and like the usual suspects for six man of the year, it's like Lou Williams. He's taking away all the shots from D'Angelo Russell and that mess in LA. So he's probably out of the contention. And then Jamal Crawford's not played very well. Isaiah Thomas is starting now. So like, I think there's an opening here for Joseph to get his way into the conversation and maybe sort of change the way we look at that award, because it's usually just the dude who puts up the most points, regardless of if they play defense or not. But like Joseph's doing everything. He's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and if it was up to like analytics and advanced stats, I think Joseph would be a shoe-in for that. But I think you're right. It's just it's an award that goes to the guy who prolifically scores and does so in a prominent manner for the team. But Joseph has just filled in really well. In lieu of everybody else who has done poorly on the Raptors bench, we haven't seen much from Patrick Patterson. He was a little better this week than last week, but still not the same player we've seen over the last 2 years. Terrence Ross has completely disappeared. He's been injured for 2 weeks, and for the time he has played, he's been awful. And we'll talk about that later on. But Joseph has been able to fill in for those guys and make the bench at least serviceable. And at the same time, they've been able to roll out Lowry, DeRozan, and Corey Joseph late in games and been totally fine in that three-guard set, even though they're giving up some size. That was most obvious, I think, in the Wizards game, just because they were going up against a prolific backcourt against Wall and Beal. And Beal shot well, Wall did not, but it was just like, it was a show-off game for Corey Joseph in a lot of ways, not just for that game-winning shot. He got to play defense. He did some stuff on offense that you just didn't see from Vasquez and Williams last year. And it's just, he's doing phenomenal stuff. And it's even more phenomenal if you start looking at the numbers behind it.
Yeah, he's been pretty great. Harsh wrote, again, it's like a week old now, but I think it still holds true. Check out Harsh's article on Raptors HQ and check that out. Let's talk about the Phoenix game. The Raptors lost. I felt like they didn't play too poorly, though. I mean, the second night of a back-to-back is always tough, especially when you're coming back home after playing the first half on the road. And Phoenix, I don't know. I like in Phoenix, I wrote about this in the preview for that game. Phoenix is sort of like a good Boston in that
yeah, it's really true.
Deep. Like, they're really deep, but they have, like, you know, really talented players all over the roster. Like, Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe have been playing out of their minds so far. Eric Bledsoe is so good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He, like, the final play of that game where Scola had the game-tying three on the line, like, Bledsoe over-rotated so hard to cut off Lowry, and then somehow managed to over-rotate back when he was way out of position trying to get back to Scola when he had the three, and then he over-rotated and then recovered enough to get the block shot. It was like, man, he's so quick, he's so athletic, he's such a good defender, and like he's been shooting the lights out of the ball too. Him and Brandon Knight are both shooting like over 40% from three. Like they're a really... I don't know. I wasn't super high on them coming into the season because I wasn't sold on the whole Markieff Morris thing. And he's actually been really bad. Like, I think someone mentioned this on Twitter during that game. Like, there was the whole talk about trading Patrick Patterson for Markieff Morris. And, like, no thank you. Like, as bad as Patterson's been, Morris seems like a head case. And he's been really bad this season. He's, like, settling for a lot of threes and jumpers and just doesn't look right. He's shooting, like, a career worst percentage. But, back to the way the Raptors played, like, I don't know. What did you make of how they played in this game?
This one, I didn't watch as intently for this one than I did the Wizards game, and it kind of had that schedule loss built into where it was on a back-to-back, coming back home from Washington after a really grinded-out game, and they just did things that kind of point to that being the case. Like, they had to play Bebe for minutes, and when he was out there, he was just abysmal on the defensive end. I think he lost to Ledovich 2-3 times, and Ledovich was just shooting the lights out of the ball, and they put, I think, Bebe and James Johnson on him for extended periods of time, and both those guys just were not involved in the team defense at all. And I don't think that happens in a game that where everybody's pretty well rested and they don't have to dig that deep into the bench. And that ended up really just kind of being the difference. Ledovich was 6-for-7 from 3, 20 points, and he played with Brooklyn, and this team handled him really well because you just get out and force him to take a couple dribbles, and once he puts the ball on the floor, he's pretty much useless. So all you have to do is go out and guard his shot, and the Raptors just didn't do that. So for me, that was really just the difference in the game. Both Ledovich and Lauer, and he was also
totally
good
wrong
with his shot, and they didn't get out pretty well on him either. So I apologize for the last name, but that was really the difference, letting those bench guys go off.
Yeah, his proportion between number of letters in name and ability to pronounce it is a little off.
If I can't pronounce your name, you should not be making shots. The Toronto Raptors in the NBA.
Well, like, I mean, the Bebe thing is interesting because I was kind of encouraged from the first couple minutes he played. He looked like he challenged a couple shots. He got a couple block shots, I think. And then, yeah, they put in Ledovich, and there was just no guarding him out to the perimeter, which is weird because, like, Bebe seems like a pretty mobile guy and just had no chance. And I don't know.
It's tough.
That was a weird team, too, because, like, everyone talks about how much you want your bigs to shoot, but, like, there aren't a ton of teams that can throw out a guy like two guys like Ledovich and Lauer who, you know, play the 4 and 5 and can both shoot threes pretty reliably. Like, there aren't that many teams that can do that. So it was probably a tough matchup for the Raptors. I thought it was going to be, I wrote about this just like we said, it was the second night of a back-to-back, and the Raptors are playing with essentially 8 guys right now. And, you know, the Suns have like 12 guys who average 11 minutes or more. Like, they can just go deeper. And I think that was the difference. Want to talk about James Johnson?
Yeah.
Okay.
James Johnson.
Yeah, my favorite thing. So he, after the game against the Cavs, tweeted #mood_underutilized, which, as has been covered, that's not a mood. So that's out of the way.
We don't need to criticize the existentialism of it.
Yeah, yeah. But so the thing with that is, like, I don't know. That really rubbed me the wrong way because, like, it's not as if... What's that?
Say it. It's because you hate him.
No, it's not because I hate him. I don't think he's a very good player, but, like, I don't hate him. But, yeah, he's not a great player. But the thing that rubbed me wrong about it was, like, I mean, it's after... They're on a 3-game winning streak. They just beat the Cavs. Like, that... I mean, that's a weird time to voice your displeasure with your role. And, like, before the last 2 games against, like, the Cavs and Clippers, he'd been playing like 16, 17 minutes a game. Like, he'd been getting into games. And, you know, he'd been used in that weird lineup against the Lakers where he played some center for a bit and was pretty successful. And I thought we might see more of that. And I don't know, maybe matchups didn't dictate that. But, like, I don't know. Like, it's not like he wasn't getting any playing time. Like, last year, he felt like he was getting a DNP CD pretty much every night or for large stretches of many games in a row that was happening. And, like, it's not happened this season. He's had, you know, a few games where he hasn't played, but for the most part, he's gotten into pretty much every game, if I remember correctly. And I don't know, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And everyone said the right things afterwards, but like, I don't know. I just, that's the kind of stuff that you don't usually see with the Raptors. It was sort of weird to see it. And I don't know. Like, what do you think will come out of this?
Yeah, I'm not too upset about it as far as him voicing his displeasure. I think the timing was definitely weird considering he had just won a game against one of the best teams in the NBA. But from his perspective, I could see why it's a little more frustrating this year because he's a bit closer. He might be chomping at the bit a little bit more because he's closer to being a regular rotation player. I think last year he was further back in the roster and they had a couple reliable bigs that they could play ahead of him in Hansborough and Chuck Hayes. And you can argue whether that's a good coaching decision to play Chuck Hayes against over James Johnson. But I think just situationally, he is more inclined to be playing this year and just hasn't been doing it. You know, Patrick Patterson's really struggled, but he's played, you know, three or four times the minutes that James Johnson has. So if you go to the three spot, Terrence Ross has been a net negative for this team, but James Johnson is playing about half the minutes that Terrence Ross is. That might be a little bit low. I think he's playing maybe 5 or 6 minutes less a night than Terrence Ross is. It's not half. But regardless, I think the situation dictates that he can be a little bit more frustrated this year. I don't have a problem with him tweeting that out, really. I think we make too much out of social media. And this is coming from the guy who writes about social media every week.
Oh, this was gold for your column.
Well, no, it wasn't because you stole it. And
oh, yeah. Sorry. Down. I had to write a news post. It was a pressing issue.
It was a pressing issue. I respect your decision to do that. Yeah, I don't make a big deal about it. He apologized. I do wish we did see more of him, though, and we're going to get into Terrence Ross at some point. But, you know, he plays well on offense, and he makes some bad decisions on defense. He's actually a pretty poor defensive player statistically. But I think the positives outweigh the negatives. He should be playing a little bit more than 7 or 8 minutes a night.
Yeah, I mean, we know how I fall on this. I think he's just a space-headed defensive player who, if he could stay attentive for two straight possessions, that'd be sweet. And, like, yeah, he does do some good things. He's got a really nice post-up game. He can get to the basket sort of whenever he wants. But I think he has a lot of limitations. And the thing with him and the way this roster is built, yeah, they only are using, like, 9 guys. But, I mean, there's not a ton of path for him to get into like regular minutes, I don't think, because, you know, you talk about the 4 spot, which is probably where he's best suited. I mean, as bad as Patterson's played, he's still, you know, a reliable 3-point shooter. His percentage is creeping up. Yeah, sorry, he hasn't been this season, but his percentage is creeping up slowly. And like Scola has been amazing so far. He's been FIBA Scola, which is really nice.
Yeah,
so there's not a ton of minutes to go around at the 4 spot as it is. And then you look at the, you know, the 3 spot, Carroll's playing like 34 minutes a night or something crazy. Like,
wait, yeah, 37, 38. He played 40.
Yeah, so like, there's not a ton of minutes available there, like, to begin with.
Well,
and then
there should be. I think Carroll shouldn't be playing that many minutes a night.
Maybe not. Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair.
That's more on Terrence Ross, though, than it is Carroll. I think if they trusted Ross to play a little bit more at the 3, they've been playing him at the 2 more this season, but there's no backup 3 then except for James Johnson. So,
well, then, I mean, but you're also looking at, but sorry, you're looking at your fourth quarter lineup is largely with DeMar DeRozan at the 3.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so that's another like 8 minutes of time where James Johnson's just never going to get in. And I don't know. I just don't. And like when he's at the 3, the shooting on the floor, there's just none. It's just non-existent. And I think that kind of kills their offense a little bit, and it just kills the spacing. It kills, I don't know. I just think him at the 3 doesn't really work because he's such a limited shooter and he's best suited at the 4, but there just isn't a ton of minutes at the 4 to go around. So I think it's reasonable that he hasn't gotten in the lineup a ton. I think he should get more minutes as a center going forward in certain situations because that lineup has worked a couple times here since JV got hurt. But like, I don't know. I just don't know if there's a ton of time available for him. And I'm probably going to get ripped in the comments because everyone loves James Johnson. But again, we talk way too much about a 10th man.
It's,
holy crap.
It's weird timing. It's weird timing for that tweet, I think, is just...
Yeah, I think that's...
We're pulling straws here for a team that's 11-7 to be talking about a 10th man this much. So I agree with that.
Yeah. No, they've played pretty well. I'm pretty down with how they've played so far. And, I mean, we rip on DeMar DeRozan, but, I mean, it's gotten to the point where there's not much to rip on. He's been really good this year, aside from like a half dozen fourth quarters where he's gotten too ISO heavy. Like, I don't know. I've really enjoyed watching DeRozan this season. He's been such a good passer and setting other guys up. I don't know. I think some of the hate has gone. I've mentioned this before. I think some of the hate has gone a little too far with him. I still wish he could shoot threes, and you know, I wish he didn't go so ISO heavy sometimes. But I think for the most part, he's been really solid. Guy who's been not solid, and you're writing an article about for Raptors HQ, I'm assuming, is Terrence Ross. Can you spoil a bit of your Terrence Ross article for us? What are you getting into with him?
I mean, you could probably guess what I'm going to be. I'm mostly talking about the offense, offensive side of the ball for Terrence Ross, which has just been abysmal. And, you know, on looking at him on the court, it's frustrating, but looking at the numbers, it's really just like, it's dire. Like, his shooting percentage overall is down 7% this year. His three-point shooting is down to 29%. And I don't want to spoil the whole piece, but looking at guys in the league who play as heavy minutes as Ross does, and it's not that heavy, it's over 16 minutes a game, with those really poor shooting numbers, you're putting him in the league with guys like Nick Stauskas, Corey Brewer, and Kobe Bryant. And it's abysmal. And you can go deeper into the numbers and find worse stuff, but it's the fact that he isn't shooting the ball well, and the fact that all he does is shoot the ball, because he doesn't drive to the basket. He has 7 free throw attempts all year, which is less than Anthony Bennett, who's played 42 minutes total all season, which is incredible for a guy who plays two guard primarily in this system. So,
and it's like best, you know, trait is his athleticism and his leaping ability, and he should be able to get to the rim like at will.
You watch the tape, though. All he does is takes that one dribble. He either shoots the ball at the three or takes that one dribble and pulls up. And if you watch the tape enough, those lanes are there for Ross. If he wants to go to the rim, he'll get challenged, but he'll probably get fouled. And it's just DeRozan, at some point in his career, he just decided that he was going to start getting to the rim and learning how to get contact. And I'm not sure if Ross will ever get there, because you have to have that development year in, year out, where you take the punishment and then you start earning the calls, and then you get to the point where DeRozan is, where you can get to the line 8 or 9 times in a game and have that respect from the officials. And you know, Ross gets frustrated. He doesn't go to the rim anymore and just starts taking these jump shots, and it's just been really bad for the team. And that has a trickle-down effect too, because then you've got to play Carroll heavy minutes, and you've got to put Corey Joseph in for 35 minutes a night, which is good, but it takes away from his bench productivity. So it's very bad when Terrence Ross is very bad.
Yeah, we're going to get into a little bit of speculation stuff in a little bit. I think we'll do that on the other side. Well, yeah, we'll wrap the second. We were supposed to take this entire podcast like half an hour. We've gone a half an hour in the first segment.
Yeah, it happens.
We're bound to over talk on this podcast. So yeah, on the other side, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the rest of the Eastern Conference, and is it improved? Is it just an aberration through a month? We're going to talk about the Raptors potential draft pick with the Knicks there and all that, and whether we should trade it or not. A whole bunch of other stuff on the other side. We'll be back in just a second. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley with John Godis. We are going to get into some talking about the rest of the Eastern Conference, because a lot has been made about the Eastern Conference just destroying the Western Conference this season so far.
We made it.
I mean, that's probably, what's that?
We made it.
Yes, it's finally we can get rid of all this talk of should we end conferences and stuff, because again, this stuff is cyclical. And I mean, let's get into this though. Do you think, like, so right now, I believe I read Matt Moore wrote a thing today for CBS just about the conference and how the East has been really good against the West so far. And if you don't count the Warriors or the Sixers, the East is like 45-29 against the West, which is kind of amazing. Like last night, I think every East-West game was won by the Eastern team. The Bulls beat the Spurs. The Bucks beat the Nuggets. So there's a lot of talk today about, oh, is the East fixed? Is the East better than the West now? There are more teams above 500 in the East than there is in the West. I'm still not totally sold on that, because I think the quality of the teams in the West and the talent on the teams in the West is still probably higher.
Yeah.
It seems like the Clippers and the Grizzlies and even the Rockets, like, I mean, the Rockets might be broken, but I feel like there's enough talent there that they can turn it around. I mean, the Timberwolves are sort of on the up, and the Suns look pretty solid, and the Jazz almost beat the Warriors last night. Like, there's still good teams out west. And the East still feels like it's the Cavs and then just a bunch of middling teams and then some really bad ones. But, like, maybe those middling teams are just a little better. I don't know. Like, Indiana is 11-5. They've been really good so far, but, like, is that going to keep up? Are they going to have a plus 6.2 point differential for the rest of the season? I don't know. What do you think about the East-West conversation? Do you think the East is better than the West now?
Yeah, I think in NBA talk, we always want to say one thing is better than the other thing.
Yes, which sucks, by the way.
It gets a little bit tiring. It's only like December 1st. I'm already kind of sick of it. But
Towns or Okafor?
We have to choose. Okafor has a problem.
Yeah, both can't be good.
Yeah, I feel like it's pretty equal because both conferences have one team that probably won't be beat. And I don't think anybody will beat Cleveland in the East or beat Golden State in the West. So I think the Spurs would probably make it more interesting in a Western Conference final than any of the East teams would against Cleveland. But I still think it's going to be pretty cut and dry. Those two teams are going to be in the finals. So once you get past that, I think the East might be a little bit, you know, sexier to look at because they've got more teams on the up and up, and the West has more teams on the down and down. Like the Clippers make people sad, the Grizzlies make people sad, but those are two teams in the playoff picture right now. Not to mention the Rockets, which I think are completely broken. But the East has more teams where you feel good about, you know, where they're going. The Bulls have had, you know, up and down with injuries and with consistency on both offense and defense, but they're 10-5. The Pacers have Paul George at the four, but they're 11-5. And, you know, it's new basketball things that are working, and that's what people like to talk about, right? The Charlotte Hornets, all of a sudden, they're one of the best offensive teams in the NBA. Like fun to talk about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then you've got the Raptors, and the Celtics have the best coach team in the NBA. So there's a lot of stuff where you can have more fun talking about the Eastern Conference, but I feel like it's pretty equal when you go side by side with where the West is, because I think the West will get better, and I think some teams will fall down to earth in the Eastern Conference as well.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, like, you look at the West and the East, like, I would still take, obviously, the Warriors, the Spurs, the Thunder, and the Clippers over any of the, like, the non-Cavs East teams.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Like, there's still more talented teams. And, like, I think, like, the team that comes out of the West is probably still the best team and probably has the best chance of winning the title. Like, those are all really solid teams. And, yeah, like, Oklahoma City's dealing with a new coach. Just sort of trying to figure that out. Billy Donovan might be a terrible coach, by the way, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
The Clippers, like, yeah, they're figuring things out with a new bench, and they probably need to make a trade or two. But, like, Blake has been ridiculous, and Chris Paul is still Chris Paul, and, like, they'll be fine. The East, though, I want to talk about the East.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the West. Sure. So, like, you look at the East right now, and I don't know, there's, like, I'd say there's 10 teams that have played pretty good basketball so far. I mean, the Cavs, Pacers, Bulls, Heat, Raptors, Hawks, Hornets, Celtics, Magic, and Pistons are all at 500 or better. And then you have the Knicks, who've been sort of up and down. They're sort of coming back down to earth. They've lost four in a row. And the Wizards have been, like, inexplicably bad so far. I think that'll probably turn around because John Wall is really good. But, like, who knows if that small ball thing is going to work for them. But, like, I don't know. There's some questions over who's going to make the playoffs, because you have the Hornets again, like they're shooting threes like crazy and they're playing defense while doing it, and it's working. And somehow Nick Batum is recovered, and without Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, that team is still really, you know, it's thriving. And, you know, I'm still not sold on Boston. I won't buy Boston until they win the title. Like, I just, there's something about that team. I just, like, it's just a bunch of seventh and eighth men. That's all it is. It's so annoying. I can't just wrap my head around why they're good. Their defense is awesome, but, like, I don't know. But no, I don't. The question I have for you, I guess, is with as many teams as there are playing pretty good basketball right now, are you? I mean, last week we talked about this after Jonas Valanciunas got hurt, but it's been this last week where the East has sort of really made a push. Are you at all worried about the Raptors' position in the East, in the Eastern playoff picture?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and there's 10 teams within four games of each other right now. I know we're young in the season, but that's still pretty significant when you look at half the conference is in this soft middle. So the Raptors, I said on the last podcast, you know, very definitively, I think they're going to be a 5 or 6 seed. And I don't want to say that that's not going to happen, but it's a slippery slope right now because you don't know which of these teams in the soft middle are going to go back or go forward. And the Raptors have that injury, but they're still playing well despite it. And I think that's a good sign for the Raptors because they're one of the few teams that have experienced that type of a loss so early in the season. So they've had a little bit more of a test. Their schedule has been just awful. You know, they've spent all that time on the road and now they're back home, and the home games that they have been very high degree of difficulty teams. So that bodes well for the team. I think that there will be teams in that 10 positions who fall back. And I don't know which ones that are. I know you love the Magic. I don't see them being a playoff team. I don't really
do not speak ill of the Magic. They're beautiful.
They're beautiful, but they're not sustainable, I don't feel like.
Victor Oladipo is Corey Joseph's biggest rival for a six-man. I'm irrationally in love with the Magic.
Scott Skiles, though.
Scott Skiles is an awesome coach. He's done such a good job with what they have.
That's what I said when I was a Bulls fan.
Well, yeah, no, like it's everyone said it. It's the honeymoon period with Scott Skiles is like a couple years, and then when you get to like year three and four, it's like, okay, we're done now. Get him out of here. But like, I don't know. He's been really good for this young team. I want to see more Mario Hezonja, but like, I don't know. The Magic are very interesting.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued with this Eastern Conference because all these teams are bunched in, and you can't really tell which are real and which are fake. And there's going to be, you know, 3 through 8. It looks like, and you know, you could probably throw Indiana in there. So 2 through 8, it's completely up in the air. That's going to be great come playoff time because you've got actual series where you can't predict what's going to happen. So that's definitely it's good really, for the league.
Yeah, it's really fluid right now. And like you mentioned, like it's not like so recent years in the East, it's been like, okay, you get out to a lead of like 10 games over the ninth place team and like you could afford to go through a little lull. Like last year, the Raptors were really bad in the second half and didn't really fall at all in the playoff standings. Fell from like first to fourth, like big deal. But like this year, if they're floating around that fourth or fifth and they hit a lull or they get another bad injury, you know, things can become kind of dicey because a 3-week stretch where you don't win many games can kind of cost you. And it's probably the first time that's been the case in the East in, I don't know, like 6-7 years. Like, I can't even remember the last time a team over 500 or a team that was like not widely regarded as bad made the eighth seed.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to happen this year. And I just hope it's not the Celtics. I'm sick of this. God. I want to talk about this. We talked about the Knicks. I want to talk about this pick, though, because it's sort of an interesting dynamic because the Raptors right now, like we've said, they're going along with like 8 guys in their rotation without Jonas Valanciunas. They're not very deep. They have all these prospects who are kicking around in the D League. And by the way, DeLon Wright apparently looks great in the D League, which is nice to see. But, you know, it seems like a team that could use a bit of an upgrade on the bench. And I don't know what that upgrade needs to be. Probably some guy to sort of be like a 3 who can score and then just come off the bench and put up some points when, you know, the rest of the offense isn't really clicking, to maybe give a compliment to Corey Joseph to sort of ease the burden on him on the bench. And so the Raptors have 2 draft picks in this year's first round. And one of them is this Knicks pick. Our Knicks Nuggets pick is probably going to end up being the Knicks pick because it's the least favorable of the two, and the Nuggets are bad. And the Knicks right now, I think, are 20th in the NBA overall, so that pick would be the 11th overall pick, which is decent, not great, especially because apparently this isn't really the strongest draft class.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you, John, like, are you intrigued by the potential of trading that pick to try to upgrade this team? Because like we've said, the East is pretty wide open and that second seed could be up for grabs. Doesn't really, there's not a whole lot of differentiation between, you know, the second and eighth seeds, and, you know, the second seed could conceivably, like the Raptors could conceivably make a conference finals right now, given the way they're playing and the rest of the East is playing, if the seeds line up properly. I don't know. Is that something you'd be interested in doing?
Yeah, I think with any situation with the Raptors trade, they'd be looking at, you know, dealing with a team that's a team that might be struggling or underperforming right now. And I'm thinking about two or three Western Conference teams in particular. So taking that opportunity, I think, to move that pick would be okay because the draft class isn't that strong. I don't think they're going to do it because the Raptors value draft picks so much, draft picks in development. And they have the 905 now, and I know it's not it's not attractive to develop that way, especially given the team's got this window here where they can take advantage of. But I just haven't seen that that killer move developing here where the Raptors can move a bunch of guys and get somebody in return. I don't think the league is at the point now where those moves are becoming a little less common. And I'm not sure if the Raptors can strike on that, especially with this pick, because it's not looking as good as it might have before the season. So they would definitely not have moved it before, knowing that these two teams would be pretty good, and especially knowing that the Knicks would be as good as they are. But the Knicks might fall back too. So it, as it stands right now, it's a movable pick, but because we don't know the future of where the Knicks are going, and maybe Porzingis falls back a little bit or Carmelo gets hurt. He's been hurt quite a bit in the last 4 years. So you never really know with the New York Knicks, because they seem like a team that's right on the precipice of being a bad NBA team. You know, things are working right now because they're healthy and because they've got a great rookie, but they're still playing in a dated offensive system. They've got Jose Calderon trying to guard people, and that was a problem for the Raptors 8 years ago. So how do you think that's going now? So they've got young players. They've got the Grant and Langston Galloway.
Yeah,
two really good young players as well. But I don't know if those guys can carry a team if one of their top guys gets hurt. So the pick's fluid for me is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And like the other thing too is the Raptors, like we've mentioned this before, the Raptors don't have a ton of like filler contracts that they could use to put into a trade.
Ross. Because,
Ross.
But he has to play well.
Yeah, he has to show most guys are, most of these guys are pretty reasonably paid. Like maybe Patterson at $6.3 million or so is something you could throw into a deal. But yeah, like they're not like, so a guy that I target, like I was looking at just from teams that are struggling right now, like the New Orleans Pelicans right now are a mess, and it might be, I think it was Bill Simmons who tweeted this, like when do they just go full 97 Spurs and tank and just hope to get a guy that they can put next to Davis who can actually be part of the solution going forward. And you look at their roster, and I don't know, a guy like Eric Gordon would be perfect on this team because he can just come off the bench and just shoot 40% from three and, you know, be that kind of reliable bench scoring option that they don't have. But then again, like he makes like $15 million a year, and you just can't really fit that to what the Raptors have right now. So
yeah, I'm trying to see how much like, time. How much do you know? How much time is left on that deal?
He's a free agent after this season.
Okay, so it would be a rental. And $15 million is not that much in the current situation. But yeah, you're right. At 27 years old, going into a UFA, great offseason opportunity. He'd be a rental, and I'm not sure the Raptors would want to sell much.
And I'm not sure like how they would be able to fit him. Maybe Daniel Hackett can tell us in the comments, but that's a guy that I would love to see them target, but I don't think it's happening. I'm just trying to look around for like other teams that are struggling and might be in, you know, the trading business, and like a lot of them are like they don't really have much. Like the Nets, like they don't have anything I'm interested in, and the Sixers obviously don't. The Nuggets, I mean, Gallinari would be, oh, how great would Gallinari be sliding in at the four on this team?
Yeah, it's a tough time to make deals in the NBA. Because you're on the precipice of this incredible influx of TV money where the contract situation is just going to change. So guys, teams that have guys on thrifty contracts want to hold on to them as long as possible. And teams that are overpaying for guys, those contracts are going to look pretty good in two seasons. So,
but on the flip side too, like, first round picks are more valuable than ever this year because the structure of those deals isn't changing with the incoming cap. So guys are going to be even better values. So there's trade offs both ways. I still think I'm of the mind that the Raptors, you know, the way the East is currently situated, like we've talked about, I think there's a real chance for them to win a round or two in the playoffs if everything's clicking well and they're healthy going in and they get, you know, the proper seeding and matchups. But like they're going to have to make a trade to make that a real reality, I think, just because the bench is so bereft of talent right now. It's pretty tough. You want to get to the episode sponsor and wrap this thing up?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We'll be back in just a second with our episode sponsor. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Wrapping it up here with our episode sponsor. This week's episode is brought to you by one Joey Graham, the 16th overall pick in the 2005 NBA draft. For a time, he looked like he might be okay. Never, ever became anything worth noting. Joey Graham, what happened, man? I don't know. I don't even know what to say about Joey Graham. There's like nothing that stands out from him as a Raptor in terms of like
you picked him.
Yeah, I know. But like we've gotten to the point. We're 10 episodes in. Like we're through good players.
I think we've picked and chose.
Either that, or we have to like ration them for later episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to have some stinkers in here. We had Jermaine O'Neal before. Joey Graham might be the most depressing so far. That's because like he seemed like a super good athlete and really bouncy and had a couple of nice dunks here and there. And, you know, he was drafted one spot ahead of Danny Granger when Danny Granger turned into a really good player for a little while there. And you just really wanted to have Joey Graham be as good as Danny Granger. He was always the guy I kind of like compared him to because they were sort of similar players.
Yeah.
And like that never worked out. And Joey Graham. Did he have a brother?
Stephen Graham, yeah.
Did he play for the Raptors?
He played in the league.
Yeah.
I can't tell you if he played for the Raptors. I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page right now. Wikipedia never lies. No, he did not play for the Raptors.
Yeah, he's not a future episode sponsor. We'll put it at that.
Yeah.
So anything stand out for you from Joey Graham?
Well, you know, when I was younger, like 10 through 15, I was a huge fan of the Lakers. So mm-hmm. I thought when we drafted Joey Graham, because I had kind of transitioned to a Raptors fan once the Lakers started to kind of move
on. Weren't you a Bulls fan too? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I was young. they kind of moved on from the Shaq and Kobe era, and I was like, well, I guess I should cheer for this team because they're close. So I started cheering for the Raptors, unfortunately. And they drafted Joey Graham, and I thought he was like, oh, he was going to be our Devin George, you know? I thought he was going to be like our big three who made shots, and it just never happened. Interesting that Stephen Graham, who you didn't know who he was, spent more time in the NBA than Joey Graham did.
What?
Also, great, great stat here in the 2007 playoffs where Joey Graham played 18 minutes a game and started three of the games. He shot 29%.
Stephen Graham was in the league? No, he played the same number of seasons, it looks like. But he just played for multiple teams.
Oh, I thought it was
basketball reference.
Oh, yeah, 2010-11. See, they even left the league at the same time.
Yeah, it was a nice. It was like a Sedin brother situation. the thing I remember about Joey Graham for me was like playing NBA Live like 07 and like always just playing Joey Graham in my starting lineup, just trying to make him good all the time, just like feeding him the ball, and like he was always terrible in those games. He could never shoot. And I was paid for having him in the starting lineup and playing him like 30 minutes a game or whatever the equivalent was with 7 minute quarters or whatever I played. Joey Graham, disappointing, man. Disappointing.
Well, in a long line of disappointing three spot players.
Yeah. Like this guy, he kind of started that whole terrible run of bad small forwards, did he not? I guess Anthony Parker was in there and he was good. But,
he was okay.
Yeah, he was good for what that Raptors. That was a weird Raptors team. We've talked about it. That was a weird
Euro ball. We've had a Euro ball player every week. Every week that I've been on in the episode sponsor. So we always get to talk about our super white Brian Colangelo teams.
Next week is Rasho.
Yes.
Joey Graham's best season as a Raptor, I guess it was 08-09. He played 78 games, started 10, played 20 minutes a game, 7.7 points, 3.7 rebounds, half an assist. He shot 18.8% from three.
Good for him, man.
That was fun, yeah. This is Joey Graham. So much potential and never turned into anything. Just damn this team. This is the segment that's going to be sponsored by like some sort of whiskey.
Yeah,
just like
sponsored by crippling depression.
His career, he had 5.9 points for the Raptors. 6.4 points for the Raptors. 3.1 rebounds. Shot 31.4% from three. Just a very underwhelming NBA career. Kind of guy that like comes and goes in no time that you don't really realize had a short career. You know what I mean?
Could have drafted Gerald Green.
Or Danny Granger. Like, I know Danny Granger is nothing now,
Or Jan Mahimi.
Really?
Or Jarrett Jack or Nate Robinson. We could have had Nate Robinson.
Are you just going through that whole draft
I
now?
I am. It's a really interesting draft. David Lee. We could have had David Lee. Salim Stoudemire, who was awful.
Wasn't David Lee the 30th pick?
Yeah. Brandon Bass.
Andrew Bogut was the first pick that year. That's interesting.
Yeah. Ersan Ilyasova. We could have had him.
Mm-hmm. I remember, Hakeem Warwick was always a guy I would trade for in NBA because he could dunk and stuff.
Lou Williams. We could have had Lou Williams. Wait, we could have had Lou Williams.
Antoine Wright was in this draft.
Amir Johnson.
Man, this is, yeah. Charlie Villanueva was the 7th pick this year.
Isn't it interesting that our second round pick drafted the 5th to last in the NBA draft in 2005 would become one of the greatest Raptors of all time? And we drafted Joey Graham in the first round.
And who did the Raptors take in the second round that year? Roko Ukić and Juroš Slokar.
Johnson was on a trade. That's right.
Yeah, I always looked forward so much to the Raptors' second round picks because I was like, oh, maybe it's a guy I've seen in the tournament or whatever. Like PJ Tucker one year, they took him. I was like, hey, cool, PJ Tucker. Yep. And then you look at this year, it was Roko Ukić and Juroš Slokar. I think they played like one game combined in the NBA.
Yeah, so sad.
It's actually going through second rounds of the draft might be the most like depressing thing you could possibly do with your time. There are a lot of just guys who just.
I agree.
Yeah, that's another thing we could do another time, sponsored by some sort of alcohol. All right, John, thank you for joining me today. We talked probably way too long about stuff that didn't really need to be talked about, but I appreciate you joining me. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Headquarters. John, do you have anything coming down the pipe?
Well, you can read my Terrence Ross piece either tomorrow or Thursday and have a good laugh and a good cry.
So, yeah, for my other site, I'm going to be probably writing something about the Lakers and Sixers game, the Sadness Bowl. I don't know why I'm going to do this to myself, but I'm going to, and it's going to be great. So have a look for that sometime tomorrow. I'll tweet it out. As always, just follow the show and subscribe and review and rate on iTunes. Follow Raptors HQ at Raptors HQ and all that fun stuff. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Headquarters.